This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count. Whoa. Here comes a submission. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout. He's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the July 4th episode of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Daniel Galvan. It is a big week in MMA, and we're going to talk about what's going to go down this weekend in Las Vegas International Fight Week on Friday. We've got the Ultimate Fighter finale. Then Saturday, UFC 226, a great lineup the UFC has put together. Also in this week's episode, we'll take a look back at last week's Bellator 201, which saw Lima McFarlane retain the Bellator flyweight title. Also, we'll get into Thursday's PFL 2, which of course will be on NBCSN, plus we'll have our buy-sell segment. We'll talk about Ali Abdelaziz's comments about the financial state of Conor McGregor, plus going to have three interviews for you. You're going to hear from Zach Otto, Rick Glenn, and Cole Farrow. Of course, if you're not subscribing to this podcast, please do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and leave us a rating review. Let us know what you like about the podcast. But Daniel, how the hell are you doing, man?
I'm doing absolutely great, save for the fact that I am a Houston Rocket fan, and I have decided to just not watch the NBA for the next 3 years, Jason.
Man, it's crazy what's going on in the NBA. Adam Silver, you might have a problem with your salary cap situation, but I don't know if you saw this. Mark Stein, I think it was his name, from ESPN saying that Boogie Cousins' only offer was from the Warriors, which is just crazy.
That makes absolutely no sense. I don't understand, because you're literally talking about a dude who's, like, seriously, one of the best centers of his generation. Maybe never the best, but that fact, and the fact that he signed a $5.3 million deal when guys like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope are getting massive contracts is absolutely bananas. The NBA makes absolutely no sense. But the thing is, we'll still be watching.
It's good to be represented by LeBron's agents management team, because you get that kind of deal if you're Pope. But it's just a crazy couple of days in the NBA. I'm a big NBA fan, but as a Magic fan, literally the season's over. I saw Sean Alshadi had a great tweet on Monday night. He said, can we just fast forward to the 2019 season, because we already know what the 2018 season. So, yeah, just a crazy time in the NBA. But we're here to talk about MMA. Man, Dale, I'm excited about Saturday night. It's when you talk about when the UFC puts their best foot forward to put on a great fight card, they can do that. And Saturday night is just one of those fight cards that I'm really looking forward to. It doesn't happen too often that, you know, on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm just like, man, can't wait for Saturday to get here. But that's what this Saturday is. When you look at, the fights you're going to get on pay-per-view, I mean, throughout this fight card, there's a lot of interesting matchups. I like that feature fight pass prelim of Dan Hooker and Gilbert Burns. You look at the FS1 prelims, Assuncao Font, that's a huge matchup at 135 pounds. And then you look at the five fights you're going to get on pay-per-view. I mean, Gokhan Saki and Khalil Roundtree, I think we know why that's on the pay-per-view, a fight that's going to likely end in a knockout. Chiesa Pettis, of course, fight that was supposed to take place earlier this year, but due to the incident that happened with Conor McGregor and the Dolly, that fight did not happen. Ngannou Lewis is a fight that it feels like we've been talking about for 2+ years. I think the UFC really has timed this matchup correctly. And then you look at the main event, co-main event. I mean, I'm more excited for the co-main event than I am the main event. It's not saying I'm not excited about the main event, but the co-main event is just, you talk about two rising young guys, prime of their career. Holloway Ortega, to me, is the fight that I'm most interested to watch on Saturday night.
I totally pick up what you're throwing down, because not only is Ortega and Holloway going to be absolutely bananas, you have the idea that this will not be the only time these two square off. So that's a great featherweight bout. I mean, we're finally getting a quote-unquote super fight, man. A light heavyweight champion going up and challenging the heavyweight champion. This is a huge card. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I mean, just a couple matchups you didn't even mention, just to showcase the depth. Lando Vannetta, Jakar Close, that should be great. Mike Perry and Paul Felder should be one hell of a contest. And Paulo Costa, you know, mini Vitor Belfort, the second coming of Vitor Belfort, he's got to step up in Uriah Hall. And, you know, Costa could absolutely be one of these guys we're talking about coming off the card. But honestly, dude, just looking at this main card, there is not a single weak spot on it. This is the perfect combination of fights that matter and fights that are likely going to be entertaining. You can't pick a single fight on here that will likely be boring. The one that's most likely to be boring out of all five is the main event, which it definitely won't. But I'm in love with this fight card. I'm in love with the Khalil Roundtree-Gokhan Saki matchup. I just feel like that's just the greatest matchup for either of those light heavyweights. And, you know, Conor McGregor throwing a dolly or a barricade or whatever into a bus, that hurt the UFC at that point in time, but that really, really helped this UFC 226 card with the addition of Pettis and Chiesa and Felder and Perry.
I just don't know what to think about Anthony Pettis at this point in his career. I just, you know, that's when it comes to making picks for this fight card, that's probably the fight that is the toughest for me to pick. But when you look at that main event between Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier, if Daniel Cormier pulls off the victory on Saturday night, there's no question he's now in the conversation as greatest of all time.
Yeah, that type of accomplishment would be huge. It's a really difficult conversation because so many of those guys at the very top have major questions regarding performance-enhancing drugs, suspensions like John Jones and Anderson Silva. But clearly, if you're a two-division champion in the year 2018 in the UFC, you deserve to be a part of that conversation. It's just unfortunate for DC that I think it's absolutely difficult to, even with this victory, to make that case definitively given the blemishes on his record to John Jones. I just feel like that really – and you can make the statement, but you kind of might sound like Dana White, the way he calls whoever's the upcoming champion defending the title as the best fighter of all time. That, to me, is a big blemish that he's going to have to correct. But obviously, with the victory, he does become a part of the conversation. And this is a really exciting fight, and it's a fight where it makes you wonder, like, what can the UFC do to make people care about Stipe Miocic? Because, like, this dude is an awesome heavyweight, and if he beats Daniel Cormier and he still kind of maintains the same level of star power that he has, that would be a damn tragedy, because this dude is entertaining, he's a great heavyweight, and he's got a pretty good personality, but it just does not seem like he's resonating the way you would think an American heavyweight champion who's been real dominant would resonate.
His personality is just tremendous. And anyone who has seen the first episode of Embedded for this one, just to see kind of the personality of Stipe Miocic, and look, he is the greatest UFC heavyweight champion of all time, just based on the amount of title defenses and how long he has been the UFC heavyweight champion. But there was something Cormier said. I want to say he said this maybe middle of last week, late last week, where he talked, the greatest of all time conversation came up with him, and his basically response was feeling that if you have a failed drug test that you should be disqualified from the conversation. I agree with him, Daniel.
I understand the idea, but it's impossible to act like John Jones didn't happen, dude. Like, I just... Mm-hmm. Is very similar to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Like, you can't just call. I mean, Barry Bonds is very likely the best baseball player of all time. He's certainly a part of the conversation. And with Daniel Cormier, I mean, he's saying that, I would assume, also because that really helps his case. That if you take away John Jones, that really helps Daniel Cormier's case. But it's just like the fact that we have video evidence of Daniel Cormier clearly not being the better fighter in his weight class, regardless of how much on the juice John Jones was. It's hard to square that away when maybe you're contrasting him with someone like Demetrius Johnson, who, yes, does have losses on his resume, but there's a belief that he would likely avenge those losses today. Whereas with Daniel Cormier, I don't think there's any point in his career that I think he would beat John Jones. Obviously, some of those fights were close, but clearly Jones established himself as a superior fighter, even if he was on the juice.
Yeah, I mean, the first fight, he didn't fail a drug test. I mean, because I know people like to point to that first fight, UFC 182, but this is newsflash, people. Cocaine is not a banned substance out of competition. And I'm ultimately surprised that John Jones, they go after Nevada Commission for that one, for what they did. But you look at DC in this one, once again, he's going to be the smaller man. He is at a height disadvantage of 5 inches and a 8-inch reach disadvantage in this fight, which, you know, I don't know if, you know, people automatically say Stipe Miocic uses his reach at a great advantage. You know, if Stipe can keep this fight on the feet, I don't know how he loses.
Yeah, as good as Cormier is on the stand-up, there's a massive advantage when it comes to Stipe. And the thing is, Cormier is one strong dude. I mean, obviously the height is not there, but his ability to pummel fighters against the cage and control them, that's going to be difficult even moving up. His opponent will still likely have difficulty there managing Cormier. I mean, that's his bread and butter. That's what took him to the Olympics. So on the feet, I would say Stipe clearly has the advantage, but I don't think it's going to play out primarily on the feet just because a guy as smart as Daniel Cormier is going to do what he wants to do, and that's make this fight dirty, and that's eliminate that distance. And while I do think – and I think Stipe is going to win this fight, going to win this contest, but I do think this is going to be really back and forth. I think Daniel Cormier is going to have a lot of success, Jason, against that cage. I think he's going to win rounds there, piece together takedowns, and land a few good strikes. But when it comes down to it, late in this fight, I feel like Stipe is going to be able to rock Cormier and get rounds that way. I don't know if he's going to be able to get the finish, Jason, but I do see Stipe eventually working back to the feet and really having success there. With that being said, this to me is going to be a three-dimensional fight. It's going to play out in every area, you know, if it goes longer than 2 minutes. When it's a heavyweight fight, there's always a chance we're done with this fight after 27 seconds.
Hey, you're very true on that one. Let's just hypothetically say Daniel Cormier wins on Saturday night. Is his next fight heavyweight or light heavyweight? I will tell you this. My gut feeling is I don't know, outside of a John Jones fight, I don't know if there's another fight that would truly interest DC at 205 pounds.
Yeah. Well, here's the question. Outside of John Jones and Brock Lesnar, what other fight would interest Daniel Cormier coming off of a victory?
That's a great point, Daniel.
Because, I mean, to me, if you're Daniel Cormier, it seems like where his head at is, let's do big money superstar fights. It should be, because this guy's planning to retire. He's going to have a great career as a broadcaster, but, man, get that money while you can. And so what is there another big-money fight on the horizon? I mean, to me, there's one obvious answer, and it's never going to happen. But a Cormier-Cain-Velasquez fight would be pretty interesting, and I think it would do good business, but that would never happen, obviously.
If you want to see those two guys fight, go to San Jose, California, and American Kickboxing Academy, and you can see them go at it every day.
And I bet that would be so entertaining. That would be so entertaining to see that. I mean, it would have been entertaining to be in San Jose back when Herschel Walker was training and see how he squared off toe-to-toe with a guy like Cain Velasquez. But that's the one man that I think has a lot of chemistry with Cormier, and the fact that they're partners, that would make it interesting. But obviously, that's super unlikely to happen. I mean, is there any other names that stick out to you that Cormier that would be, you know, quote-unquote big-money fights for DC? Because the two potential opponents – have significant issues when it comes to, like, actually competing in the sport of MMA within the next, like, 6 months. Obviously, Lesnar has to enter the testing pool. John Jones, I mean, he's got some issues regarding mm-hmm. suspension. So there's got to be another option, and I don't know what – obviously, we're being kind of rude to Stipe here, but if DC wins, what's the other option, you think?
I don't know if there's another option. I mean, I know Gustafsson wants that fight, but I don't think that's a fight that truly interests Cormier, because look, they've done business together before and it didn't do well on pay-per-view. You know, you have to think for Cormier, it's either Brock or John Jones. And, you know, there is kind of the speculation out there that Brock is kind of waiting to see what happens on Saturday night for what his next move is. I think pretty much everyone believes Brock Lesnar will fight in the octagon within the next 12 months. I think the question is who is that opponent? Is it Stipe Miocic? Is it Daniel Cormier? Or is it John Jones? But, you know, I don't, you know, I mean, outside of, you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe Miocic and Cormier have a classic on Saturday night, and maybe you just run it back.
Absolutely. I think there's a – I think, you know, what would have been a good buy-sell segment that we'll do later on, I just thought of it right now, is do you buy or sell? We'll see an immediate rematch out of either of these two title fights. Because it seems like whenever we get a pair of title fights, especially really interesting ones heading into it, one of those ends up being a super close, compelling contest that requires a rematch. So it would be a shocker if we see Stipe DC 2, Holloway Ortega 2 after this Saturday.
I would say it'd be more likely if Stipe loses a title. Just the fact of, I mean, remember, it was just over 2 years ago that he won the UFC heavyweight title against Fabricio Werdum, and this is now his fourth title defense. So I would think it'd be kind of likely there. I mean, at featherweight, it's such a, you know, I guess the question is ultimately the winner of Holloway and Ortega going to fight Frankie Edgar next. This is an awesome fight between Max Holloway and Brian Ortega. You know, two guys who are both very young. I believe they're both 27 years old. You know, their reach is essentially the same. You know, I think in terms of how does this fight play out, I think the interesting part is what happens if this fight hits the mat, and how can Max Holloway defend the submission attempts that Brian Ortega is going to throw up there. But, you know, this is one of those fights where I think that it's got a high probability of at least making it to the fourth round. But Brian Ortega is a guy who typically gets off the slow starts, and then ultimately, you know, he gets better as the fight goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, he did a good job of taking that narrative and turning it on its head in his last fight against Frankie Edgar. As an airplane just flies over my head, Jason. How rude of that airplane, Jason. I'll let you take the baton for like 20 seconds while I fight. Okay, never mind. The airplane's gone. I think they're really interested in my Frankie Edgar, Max Holloway take. I mean, Max Holloway, Brian Ortega take. But what I was saying was, Brian Ortega, every fight, Jason, completely changes how his skill level is. This dude kind of built a reputation on being that third-round warrior who takes you on a fight-of-the-night journey, eventually getting that submission. But he goes up against Frankie Edgar, first round, blasts him, gets the performance of the night. So I wouldn't be shocked if he starts a little faster than we think, but I also do believe that Max Holloway is a really, really special talent, an absolute phenomenon. And I think this is going to be a performance that could likely elevate him to that top-tier level. We're talking about the Demetrius Johnson-type level, because Brian Ortega represents a phenomenal antagonist, because this is one of the more talented featherweight challengers we've seen in quite a very long time. Clearly on the ground, Ortega's going to threaten big time with the submissions, but I do think Max Holloway, Jason, will absolutely have his way with Brian Ortega on the feet. And I think he's going to do a very nice job of keeping it there. Obviously, Ortega packs the punch to rock Holloway at any time. Just ask Frankie Edgar, Jason. But to me, I look at this fight. I think there's obviously room for Brian Ortega to wow us, because that's all he's done lately in his career. But I tend to side with the champion here to retain the championship via unanimous decision.
Yeah, I side with Max Holloway as well in this one. But I mean, I think if this fight stays out on the feet, you know, I don't necessarily see Brian Ortega winning the fight. But I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe he can pull off the upset. Ngannou Lewis, Francis Ngannou, nearly a 4-1 betting favorite as we do this show here on Tuesday afternoon. You know, I can't pick Derek Lewis. You know, this is one of those fights where, if this gets, you know, it's kind of use your analogy about heavyweight fights. If this gets out of the first round, it could get really sloppy of two guys who are not exactly running on a full gas tank.
Who has the advantage, you think, in the gas tank? I think it might be Derek Lewis, Jason, which is crazy because early in his career, the gas tank was an issue. But by goodness gracious, did Ngannou get super tired? Like, guys get tired, but Ngannou got almost borderline Shane Carwin tired in his last fight. Remember when Shane Carwin was like lactating or something? I don't understand what was going on with the lactation with Shane Carwin. But that's how Ngannou fought. And I think if this goes to round two, Derek Lewis has a big shot at winning this. But again, in a heavyweight fight, the underdog has a much bigger chance. Derek Lewis is obviously quite talented. I think this is a return to form for Francis Ngannou. And with the discussion of what's next for the winner of Cormier-Miocic, if it's Cormier, Ngannou has a real opportunity to force that issue and be that next challenger for Daniel Cormier. But what he's got to go out here and do is remind people of all the hype that he got. They got to remind him why he was so hyped up heading into that Stipe fight. It's got to be a dominant first-round victory, and I think Francis Ngannou is going to be able to achieve that, Jason.
And Francis Ngannou is not the biggest betting favorite on the fight card. That is Paulo Costa, who, as we record this podcast, is minus 430 against Uriah Hall. In terms of the rest of the fight card, you know, the fight that really I'm paying attention to on the prelims is a Sunsal and Rob Font. Rafael Sunsal has got to go out, and he has to make a statement. He cannot go out there and get another decision win and expect that he is going to be next in line for a title shot. He is going to have to finish Rob Font. He's going to have to finish him spectacularly. If he doesn't, I think he's going to get passed up for a title shot, even though he does have a win over Marlon Moraes. But, well, we're going to see what plays out. August 4th, there between TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt. Is there another fight in the prelims that really has you interested?
Well, I mean, obviously that one does. And Jason, I don't think he's going to be able, I don't think Sunsal is going to be able to do that, because Rafon is incredibly talented. And usually when Sunsal faces top tier bantamweights, he tends to play it safe. And despite likely winning that fight, I think Rafael Sunsal probably won't solidify himself as a bantamweight challenger. But the other fight that I'm really looking forward to, if you told me I could only watch one other fight on the prelims, it would be Paul Felder, Mike Perry, Jason. Both those guys, every time they fight, are guaranteed entertainment. And regardless of who's going to win, that's absolutely the fight I would bookmark as a big-time favorite among the prelim cards to be fight of the night.
Of course, this will be one of two UFC fight cards happening this weekend in Las Vegas on Friday. We have the Ultimate Fighter finale. Of course, as of recording this podcast, a full fight card has not come out. That'll come out following Wednesday night's episode of the Ultimate Fighter. But, of course, headlined by Brad Tavares and Israel Adesanya. We tend to talk about a little bit about the betting odds. I was really surprised to see Brad Tavares is the underdog in this fight at plus 110.
Well, when this fight was made, it was quite interesting. Obviously, Adesanya, major prospect, entered the UFC and could not have looked better finishing Rob Wilkinson. Then he had that second fight against Marvin Vettori. Then, man, that did not look good. But when the UFC made a matchup like this, they put him against a fighter in Brad Tavares that makes you kind of take a second glance at it and wonder, why would you rush him? I think usually the message people pick up from the UFC is that the UFC knows something. They're doing that old Joe Silva matchmaking. Yeah. So they're going to get the jump on it. But I would, when you look at the odds, man, I would jump the other way. That Marvin Vettori fight, plenty of issues. Brad Tavares is a tested high-level fighter with four consecutive wins, Jason. Look, I can't even log on to bestfightodds.com where I stand. All right, I'm on school property, but I will say this. If I was a betting man, I would absolutely put some money on Brad Tavares.
I'm with you. Now, the one thing that Brad Tavares is going to have to overcome in this fight is a 6-inch reach disadvantage. You know, remember it was a couple weeks ago that, you know, Tavares was reportedly out of this fight due to an injury, but the injury just was not as serious that would force him to pull out of this fight. This is a 5-round main event, of course. We will have the finals of the Ultimate Fighter, which I talked
about. Jason, what's been your favorite episode of the Ultimate Fighter this year?
There hasn't been one because I've only watched one episode.
You know what would be hilarious, and I know it's not going to happen, but it would be such an Ultimate Fighter thing to happen when it's the Ultimate Fighter undefeated if the finale involved a fighter that wasn't undefeated. Like there's like a late replacement.
Yeah, I just, you know, and I talked about this, I think we talked about last week or a couple of episodes back. I just, you know, I watched the first episode. I'm like, it's the same old Ultimate Fighter. Not, you know, yeah, it's, you have all these undefeated fighters, but at the end of the day, it's the same goddamn show it's been for the last 15 years. It's, you know, who's going to do something crazy in the house. It just, the show just doesn't interest me.
Yeah, it doesn't interest many people. And I do wonder, when you look at this fight card, how many fights are we expecting from the Ultimate Fighter cast to be added here?
Probably three to four, I would imagine.
Yeah, and is there anything on this fight card that it's got you excited aside from the main event or no?
No.
Yeah, I'm actually sort of looking forward to Roxanne Modafferi and Barb Hunchak. I think that could be an interesting fight. Matafari, like, completely turned her career around on the season of The Ultimate Fighter. And Barb Honchak, obviously a fighter who has seen better days, but still highly skilled. So, I mean, that's the fight, but I'm really picking at straws to look at one. I mean, Montana De La Rosa is a flyweight fighter that I'm also looking forward to. But it's just kind of interesting to see these fighters and kind of – I almost wish a fighter like Alima Leah McFarland could be a part of the UFC flyweight division just so we can kind of see where she stacks up among the UFC flyweights, because I think she would have some success against some of these names.
Yeah, yeah, that's something we're going to get into here in a little bit when we talk about Bellator 201. But, I mean, when I look at this fight card, I think I'm going to be home on Friday night, so I'll probably end up watching it live. But if something came up where – you know, buddy's like, hey, let's go hang out, or let's do this, or the wife wants to do something on Friday night. It's a DVR card for me. There's not that one fight that just makes me go, I have to sit at home on Friday night and watch these fights.
Jason, there's an absolutely 0% chance that you're watching these fights live. I mean, you might get home after a night at the bar and watch the main event, but I guarantee you, you're not watching Gerald Meerschaert versus Oscar Pacota live. I'd know it, especially on a week where we have UFC 226 on Saturday. I mean, that's getting all the focus, plus the PFL card, which I know you're going to take in as well. This has DVR written all over it. You don't want to be sitting there watching this live on FS1 as they go to commercial break after commercial break.
Are you interested in Thursday's PFL card?
You know what? Out of all the PFL cards, this to me is the least exciting. I think that speaks to maybe the quality of the tournaments compared – the quality of the welterweight and middleweight tournament compared to the ones we've already seen. Or maybe it just speaks to the fact that they're headlined – that Jake Shields just – I just see Jake Shields and I immediately think this won't be great. But I'm obviously interested because, again, they've done a nice job of stacking these tournaments with interesting fighters. But this fight card, Jason, of the first three, I think is the least interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I was thinking about that when I was looking at this fight card. There's some names on there that people are going to recognize. But, you know, in terms of kind of that fight that automatically gets you, I mean, you know, on Thursday night, you know, typically I'm kind of sitting on the couch anyway, so I'll probably put the fights on. But there's not, you know, there's not one fight that you're just like, oh, my God, I got to be in front of my television for that. I mean, and you know, the television ratings were up a little bit for PFL 2 as opposed to PFL 1. They were at 150,000, where the first one were 116,000. But yeah, there's just, as I look at this fight card up and down, not a ton really just goes, oh my man, I got to see that fight.
Absolutely, these aren't the marquee matchups you'll see in the welterweight and middleweight tournament. There isn't even a single fight I'm like super looking forward to. The one I'm most interested in is Rick Story and Yuri Villafort. And the name that I'm interested in is Bojan Vilakovic in welterweight. I thought that was a nice addition to PFL. This is a guy who I don't think he really put together all that he has in the UFC. I think he has more talent than he was able to showcase. I think he was still growing as a fighter. So in the welterweight tournament, Bojan is absolutely a name, a Serbian fighter that I think could likely play the role of spoiler and maybe surprise people by winning this tournament. But at least I think he has a real shot at it.
You mentioned Bellator 201, Alima Leah McFarland gets a submission win over Alejandra Lara. You know, you got to give Lara a lot of credit for you know, being able to defend multiple attempts there. But Alima does get the win there. And it made me think about with her, where does she rank in women's flyweight? And I remember as this fight was starting, I just happened to go on Tapology and they had the rankings that were on there. And I saw that they were at flyweight. She was at number 7, which I was kind of surprised by. I think she should be higher than number 7. But she is in a position where it's ultimately going to be tough for her to prove that she is a top, you know, say top 3 125 pound fighter. And looking on Tapology right now, they have her at number 4. I don't know if she can jump ahead of Jennifer Maia. You know, I mean, probably, you know, whenever Nico Montano fights next, which we expect to be against Valentina Shevchenko, and I think we all expect Shevchenko to win that, maybe she moves up one spot there. But I don't know if McFarland, based on the competition she's going to face in Bellator if she's ever going to be considered the number one or number two women's 125-pound fighter.
I think it's going to be impossible for her to overtake a fighter like Shevchenko. I just don't see that happening in Bellator. I think there's a case to be made that she's should be higher ranked than Nico Montano. I just think looking at the quality of competition, Montano doesn't really stick out even with the win over Roxanne Modafferi. So, honestly, it's really weird to say this Bellator champion should be above Montano, but Limole, especially with the performance against Alejandra Lara, a really skilled fighter, a really great performance by McFarlane, kind of showcasing her grappling skills, eventually getting that submission, I would almost put McFarlane above Montano. Like, I almost think that you look at Limole McFarlane, and that's probably the fourth or third ranked women's flyweight in my division. I don't think she's the third or fourth most talented when it comes to potential. I think, honestly, if she fights Jessica Eye, that's going to be a problem for McFarlane. I just think Jessica Eye looks great against Jessica Rose Clark. But I think I think McFarlane would have success and beat Montano, Sajara Eubanks. I think, honestly, if we're doing rankings, I would probably slot her at number three or number four, Jason.
And by the way, the television ratings for Bellator 201, the live plus same day DVR, 466,000 viewers. So another Bellator card under 500,000 viewers in 2018, which pretty much has become the norm on that one. Some other notes from this fight card. I do want to mention Ed Ruth gets another win, stays undefeated. And after this fight card was over, kind of the talk was about him potentially being in that upcoming welterweight Grand Prix, which is officially going to be revealed on July 17th, which at that time, the price point for DAZN is going to be announced, which the rumblings out there is somewhere as low as $10 a month and potentially as high as $15 a month. I think they need to be closer to that 10 number than 15 number. I just think it's going to be a tough sell ultimately at the end of the day. But I kind of like the idea of Ed Ruth potentially working his way into this Grand Prix.
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting opening for Ed Ruth, because obviously with the loss in that welterweight Grand Prix, that's not the worst thing in the world for Ed Ruth. I think it's understood that he's barely attempting to crack that prime of his career. He's nowhere near it. So with a loss, I think that's understandable. And if Ed Ruth is able to have a great amount of success in this welterweight tournament, I think it presents a phenomenal opportunity to build a star and build a star that maybe will be a part of the Bellator picture for a long period of time. So I think it's a win-win situation. Obviously, you're talking about a massive, massive step up in competition for Ed Ruth, Jason. But I think that's the interesting move, and I think they should absolutely make it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Juan Archuleta gets a win. Syed Awad gets a win, but did suffer a broken hand in that matchup. I'm pretty sure I saw that correctly. As the fights are going on, I had someone tweet this to me, Daniel, that there should be a retirement fight between Ryan Couture and BJ Penn. My response, no. I don't want to see that.
Me neither. Don't want to see BJ Penn fight again. I mean, that would be a much better matchup for Ryan Couture than against Syed Awad, I'll tell you that much. I mean, we were talking about it heading into the fight card, and it played out exactly how you expected a Syed Awad first-round TKO victory. That being said, no interest in watching BJ Penn back in the cage, Jason.
Yeah, I have no interest in that either. Of course, Bellator 202 coming up here in a couple of weeks, but let's get into our buy-sell segment, and we'll start off by mentioning now a former Bellator fighter, Tito Ortiz. It came out on Monday that the trilogy between him and Chuck Liddell is going to happen in Golden Boy MMA. It seems, the talk sometime later on this year, but let's go buy-sell. Tito Ortiz versus Chuck Liddell will actually happen in 2018.
I am going to buy this, Jason. I think it will absolutely happen. I think neither guy is going to train. I think they're just going to hang out until it's fight day, go in there, get their payday, and get the fight out of the way. Because you shouldn't want to train, because these two guys are up there in age, and you don't want to get the fight canceled, because this, to me, screams, this is for a payday. We want a payday. This isn't about being a great fighter. This isn't about proving yourself among the combat sports elite. This is all about a payday. And the only thing they get in the way of this payday, Jason, is an injury, which is super likely because these two guys are really, really old and really, really fight-worn. Barring an injury, I think this fight happens, and that's a sad thought. I'm buying this.
I'm just selling it because I just don't want to see it happen. you know, I could see one of these guys gets hurt and, you know, maybe they want to do this fight October, November, and it gets pushed back to 2019. But, you know, I just look at this and I really look at the people around Chuck Liddell. I mean, clearly this is nothing more than this is about a payday. I also kind of look at Oscar De La Hoya going, man, if you really want to get into MMA, is this really the fight you want to start off with? I just wonder if there's the right people around Chuck. There's ultimately a reason why he was told to retire. Now, the other part about this fight is they're going to put this thing on pay-per-view. Who's going to buy this?
I'm not. I'm like, absolutely not.
Like, what would be the price point that you would say, you know what, screw it, I'll buy it?
Not only that, what would be the last year that people would buy a Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz fight? Would be the last year that people would actually be interested in watching these two fight? Like 2008?
Yeah. I mean, if you could buy an internet stream for this fight, let's say 1999, would you do it?
No. 100% no. I got to save money for that DAZN subscription, and I'm not spending $20 on Liddell and Ortiz.
God, if that DAZN subscription is like, you know, I know in Canada it's $20. Now, converting that to U.S. dollar, it's like $15.21. You know, and you get the first month for free, which everyone's going to then get that first month and that major Bellator card. But after that, I just, you know, we talked about it last week. As an MMA consumer, you just feel like people in the MMA industry are just trying to nickel every little dime they can out of MMA fans.
Yeah, it's to me not a great business strategy because it's like, I understand the DAZN. Like, this is a group that spent a lot of money on boxing, a lot of money on Bellator. They're going to have to get a lot of subscriptions. And they're going to have a high price point if they want to make a profit. But breaking news, DAZN, you're not going to make a profit in year one. You're not going to get that many $15 subscribers to profit off this business. You're going to lose money. And the way you lose money to potentially make money in the long run is you set that subscription cost at a more reasonable number so you get more subscribers, because you're just going to scare off your initial batch of subscribers with a high, high price. That really affected Flo when they did professional wrestling. Their price point was way too high when they did a Flo Slam deal with all the independent wrestling. It just wasn't worth it. And Bellator, while that initial card, and I know it's going to be free for most people, but while that card, man, that's worth $15 as a pay-per-view, more often than not, it's not going to be that way.
Well, I mean, when you look at, you know, ESPN Plus is $4.99 a month, and you look at all the UFC content that is going to be on that service in 2019, it's kind of hard to sit there and say, you know, the number two mixed martial arts promotion is worth, you know, double that cost, you know, if not more. So I just, it'll be interesting when that press conference does happen on July 17th. Buy sell topic number two, and we're going to stick in Bellator. We mentioned about Juan Archuleta getting that win over Robbie Peralta. Juan Archuleta will be a featherweight title challenger in Bellator by the end of 2019. And I'm going to buy this, and it's more based on what the division currently looks like.
Absolutely. This isn't the featherweight division of 2 to 3 years ago. There's an opening for a fighter like Juan Archuleta, and a fighter who you think of as a prospect, but we both know this dude is 30 years old and he's had 20 fights. This guy's experienced. This guy's ready. And watching his performance against Robbie Peralta, Archuleta looked dynamic. Not only did this guy showcase his ability to control where this fight plays out with his wrestling, he showcased his ability to finish fights, showcase his power in that third round. And I think Juan Archuleta, whoever Bellator puts in front of him, I think he's going to beat them. I think he's going to get two. I think it's going to take one or two victories to get that title shot, and that's likely to happen. So I'm going to buy this too. By 2019, I think Juan Archuleta gets a title shot.
Number three, the Ultimate Fighter will be around in 2020. I am selling this because I don't think the Ultimate Fighter is around in 2019.
Really? You're selling this?
Oh yeah, I'm telling you this right now. I think the next season, the Ultimate Fighter, will be the final season. And you know, because let's be honest about it, you are more excited to watch the Contender Series than you've ever been to watch the Ultimate Fighter. And what's the difference?
That's a good point. That's a great point you bring up. The difference is the Ultimate Fighter, like, takes away all the negative energy and all that's left is positivity for the Contender Series, minus Greg Hardy fighting. I don't know. You bring up a good point, Jason. But I'm buying this because the Ultimate Fighter cannot be killed. Okay, this conversation should have happened 7 years ago. In fact, it probably did. We should probably kill this show. So while it sounds insane that the Ultimate Fighter will be around as UFC maybe makes that transition to ESPN, I just know a couple things that are just true when it comes to being a fan of this sport that you see time and again. When a fighter announces his retirement, he's not retired, and the Ultimate Fighter will never die. It makes no sense, Jason, but I believe the Ultimate Fighter will be around in 2020.
Honestly, the only reason to do the Ultimate Fighter would to be to obtain talent.
There's no – yeah, that's the actual good reason.
I mean, that's the only reason you do it. But in terms of what the product is, I remember it was a couple weeks ago you asked me, so when's the last season of the Ultimate Fighter that had you interested? And I had to go back to the ATT Black Zillion season just because I knew a lot of those guys that were on that show. But outside of that, it's just a show that it doesn't – it's a true story, Taylor. So it's on my DVR. So every Thursday I see it's on my DVR. You know what I do?
What do you do?
Just delete it.
That's depressing, man. It goes.
Hey, look, this is what you get on this podcast. We're brutally honest.
Yeah, I know. You're right, though, because the thing is, there is so much content. It's just not necessary content if you want to pay attention to the sport. It's just so, you know, there's more interest to me watching the Contender Series or PFL than a same season of the Ultimate Fighter that we've seen for the past 20 years.
Yeah, sign me up for. You know, the Contender, I would be all about Contender Series doing two seasons a year. Do that, man. Two 10-week seasons, sign me up. Because right now, the Contender Series is the only reason for me to have Fight Pass.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the logical move, to put all the focus into the Contender Series. And you're likely right. It's just a matter of, I feel like the UFC is so nostalgic about the Ultimate Fighter that it's something that's real hard for them to let die.
Yeah, time for the die. Number four, UFC 226 will be the biggest pay-per-view buy rate of 2018. Obviously, Daniel, when you look at this question, the thought process is, do you think Conor McGregor will fight in the UFC in 2018? If you say the answer to that is no, you're buying this. But if you think Conor McGregor is going to fight this year, you sell it. And I'm selling it because I think Conor McGregor will fight in the UFC by the time we hit January 1, 2019.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this card. This is a phenomenal card. If you're a hardcore MMA fan, it doesn't get better than this. This will likely be one of the best main cards of the year. Duh, obviously. That being said, I don't get the sense that this has massive, massive mainstream buzz. I think this will do fine on pay-per-view. I think people are looking forward to this. I think this will be obviously one of the top cards of the year. But if this pay-per-view is the top buy rate of the year, the UFC has massive, massive problems. I think later in the year they're going to get real. They're going to want to bring up that pay-per-view annual total, and they're going to make some risky decisions that may involve Conor, that may involve a December fight between Brock and DC, depending on if Brock gets in the testing pool like this week, because it's going to take about 6 months. So I'm selling this, even though this card is amazing. I get the sense this won't wow the UFC in the box office.
Yeah, that's my sense too. Even though it is a absolute great lineup, I'm looking forward to this lineup coming up on Saturday night. Our final one, Johnny Hendricks, who of course everyone knows announced his retirement late last week, will fight in the next 12 months. And should be noted, he was on Ariel Helwani's show this week, and his comment was, "I'm over the sport." So when you hear that comment, you say, "No, he's not going to fight." But how do you not buy this?
I'm buying this. I mean, I said it earlier. It's one of the tenets of this sport. Johnny Hendricks is a guy who's been all over the place with his comments, which is fine. That's how normal people are. They're committed one time and not so committed the next. So I'm not buying this, man. I think Johnny Hendricks will return to the cage just because that's what happens with every fighter.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way this sport is. It's absolutely the way this sport is. But when you do hear a fighter say he's over the sport, it does kind of lead you to say, hey, maybe the time has come up for Johnny Hendricks, which I guess the question with Johnny Hendricks is, what's his lasting memory? And for me, I think the memory that's always going to come to my mind is the fight against GSP, even though the decision didn't go his way, that's always going to be my lasting memory of him.
Absolutely. That is 100% the answer. Because that was, I mean, this was a guy who lost, but I think the majority of people watching that fight, they look at that fight and they say, damn, that's the first time GSP lost since Matt Serra beat him. Even though he didn't win, he really made an all-time great look mortal. I mean, it was the type of fight that practically, I mean, he basically retired GSP for a period of time. That's what he did. The ability to do that against an all-time great, that should be Johnny Hendricks' legacy. But we were kind of going back and forth. And despite his rise up the welterweight ranks, his brutal knockout of Martin Kamen, his great fight with Carlos Condit that earned him a title shot, he followed that up by winning the UFC championship against Robbie Lawler, ultimately losing it. We were talking about it, and it does seem like, while I do believe that the GSP fight will rise to the top when it comes to his legacy, the last few years of him missing weight, some of his losses, kind of ended his career on a down note.
And Daniel, we're going to see what is next for Johnny Hendricks, whether he's going to stay in retirement or maybe does he come out of retirement at some point. But what's coming up next year on the MMA Report podcast is the interview portion of the show, as you're going to hear my conversations with Zach Otto, Rick Glenn, and Cole Farrell. But before we get to those interviews, I wanted to tell you about our friends over at Nordic Track. Guys, sometimes it's just hard to find time to go to the gym. It's a constant struggle for me. I'm a busy guy. I own my own company. I'm trying to figure out times of the day that I can work out, and Nordic Track has the answers for you.
Absolutely. I'm going to be completely honest with you, Jason. I don't know if people look at how good I look with my bod, but it's pretty good, and I spend 100% of my workout inside my own home. And you can do that with Nordic Track. Nordic Track has a series of training equipment. They give you amazing workouts inside your house, which is phenomenal. I hate going to the gym. But they have treadmills, incline trainers, stuff for strength, and also exercise bikes, which I absolutely love, exercise bikes. Here's a little life hack I do, Jason. I burn a lot of whatever Chick-fil-A or buffalo wings I ate. I burn it at night on my exercise bike, whatever sport I'm watching, whether it be basketball, the World Cup, UFC, all the time I'm watching TV, I'm always on my exercise bike burning calories. You can join high energy stream workouts any time of the day without stepping out the door with Nordic Track. You can start your day with a run through the streets of Paris and end with cross training on the shores of Thailand or workout on the African safari with these streamed workouts with Nordic Track. It's amazing. And workouts are led, by the way, by the top personal trainer to ensure that you meet your fitness goals with Nordic Track.
And Nordic Track has a special offer for the MMA Report podcast listeners. Get $75 off your Nordic Track purchase by going to nordictrack.com/MMA Report and using the offer code MMA Report. Once again, visit NordicTrack.com. That is NordicTrack.com/MMA Report and use the offer code MMA Report during checkout to save $75 off your purchase. Once again, that is NordicTrack.com/MMA Report and be sure to use the offer code MMA Report to get $75 off your purchase. But with that, now we are going to head into the interview portion of the podcast. First, you're going to hear Zach Otto, who's going to be fighting next week at the UFC Fight Night card in Boise. Then you're going to hear from Rick Glenn, who will also be on the fight card. And then the final interview will be with Cole Farrell, who is going to be on the Valor Fights 51 card coming up in 2 weeks. UFC Fight Night 133 is going down on July the 14th in Boise, Idaho. We're now joined by one of the men that's going to be on this fight card, Zach Otto. Zach, as always, man, I appreciate you taking some time out. When this fight was announced, it was a head-scratcher for me. And the reason it was a head-scratcher is I don't know why this fight was ultimately brought to you. Were you surprised like everyone else was that when it comes to Sage Northcutt, you got the phone call?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I mean, of course, we know that he's been having some success and fighting a lot recently at 155. So I didn't even think it was on the table for me. And then when my manager called, I was like, is this like a fill-in or this is at 170, right? Is this... He's like, yeah, it's your fight. It's at 170 and, you know, full fight camp and everything. I was like, wow. I guess out of anybody that could have been picked, and with him being kind of a poster boy, stylistically, I don't see it going well for him.
I literally, on my podcast earlier this week, I said that. I was like, I from a stylistic matchup, I don't know why Sage People agree to this fight, because it's not like you're a small 170-er. I mean, I look at Sage, and I almost feel like he'd be a perfect guy for a 165-pound weight class. You know, he's so big at 55, and he's just not big enough at 70. And I know you've talked about this in other interviews. So, like, look, wherever this fight goes, I've got the advantage. I mean, is there a part of you that goes, does his team think something bad about me? Or, I mean, do you even think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's pretty young in his career, and he's getting better and better. And they've been bringing him up slow. You know, I don't know if it's kind of a time of shit or get off the pot, you know, like how many more bottom of the roster guys can they give him? So it's kind of like, well, let's test him a little bit. Or I don't know if they want him to stay down at 155 and they're trying to keep him away from coming up to 170. I'm not really sure, but I'm just excited about the matchup. I like you said, 165 would probably be really good for him. That last couple pounds, I'm sure, is tough, and then it affects your performance the next day. But then his walk around weight is just really small for 170. So, I like going in there and being the bigger, stronger guy, and I think it's going to work out well for me.
In terms of preparing to fight a guy with Sage's ability, the way he stands, the way he moves, is that the unique challenge of just trying to figure out, you know, who he was, you know, the first time he came to the UFC and to where he is now?
Yeah, you know, he's been evolving, and I'm sure he kind of found a home there with this gym, Team Alpha Male. And, you know, I have a buddy that trains out there, and I know they're a good team, so I'm sure he's evolving and getting better. He's not like some 37-year-old that I've, you know, has had 20 fights in the UFC where you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I'm sure he's taking a lot in every month and getting better and better, but I think it's just a little too soon for him for this step up.
You know, and for you, I mean, obviously you're always looking for a fight that's going to help you, you know, draw more attention. And this is that fight. I mean, you know, look, we both know people have various opinions about Sage Northcutt, of how quickly he's been put into position he's been put in. But would you call this, in terms of notoriety, the biggest fight of your career?
Yeah, as far as is the amount of eyes that are going to be on this fight will probably be a lot more so than any other fight I've had. So it's a great opportunity to capitalize. But at the same time, this is now my sixth UFC fight. I mean, I've been fighting guys with a lot of experience or winning records in the UFC. I've fought some tough dudes. So skill wise, I don't know if he's at the caliber that I've been fighting, but as far as notoriety, this will definitely be the most eyes.
Has it even come across your mind about, you know, getting that, you know, back-to-back win in the UFC, because it hasn't happened yet? I mean, do you even think about, like, man, why has it not been able to happen to this point?
In the past, playing other sports and stuff, I've always gained confidence through gaining experience. And now I feel really comfortable in there. Fighting these tough guys has given me a lot of confidence. So now moving forward, I think you can really start to see, the type of fighter I really am. And I'm excited to get on this win streak finally and get on a finishing streak too.
And of course, you're coming off a great victory against Mike Pyle. And we talked prior to that fight. It was, you know, a guy that you had looked up to, you know, coming up in the scene. Was that a tough fight for you mentally, just because of, you'd seen Mike's career kind of progress and knowing that was his last one?
It wasn't difficult. It made it just fun. It made it much more relaxing. It was probably the most relaxed I've ever been in a fight, as far as, I mean, we were smoking and joking the day before at weigh-ins, and it was just like a super easy going experience. But then once I was in there and, you know, the announcement happened and the walkout, I went back to serious mode, where I thought possibly my job was on the line and it wasn't going to be taken from me. So it just kept me nice and easy leading up to the fight. And then once the fight was there, it was go time. So that works well for me. But also at the same time, I feed off my opponent. You know, I'm not gonna be that Kobe Covington type. If most of the time in this game, you'd be surprised how often your opponents are super nice guys and respectful, and I pay it back to them if it's that way. And if it's, I just kind of shoot you straight. You know, if it's I don't like you and it's not a respectful type matchup, then I don't mind talking some shit. Otherwise, I don't see a need to.
You know, we always talk about perceptions versus reality in this game, and I think one of the biggest perceptions out there about MMA fighters that is not true is that people have this perception like, oh, you're this mean guy because you step into a cage and you fight. And I remember talking to Benson Henderson recently about this, where he talked about it. He's like, you know, I was asking about what would surprise people or what have you come across? And he says, a lot of people I meet that don't know who I really am, they're surprised to find out that I'm college educated. And he goes, it's just kind of this, I guess, stigma would be the best way to kind of describe that people have when it comes to the fight game.
Yeah, it's still... the sport's still in its infancy and people are still learning about it. Especially middle-aged to older people don't quite understand it because they weren't raised with it. Now we're getting this whole wave of kids that are getting brought up and it's getting much more mainstream, but a lot of people still have those thoughts about what type of person it must take to get in there and fight somebody else. And, you know, I played high level football and I have to say that's a lot more violent than what we do. And my mentality, you know, I was all state linebacker in high school. My mentality to be the best linebacker in the state of Wisconsin was way more ruthless than I need to be going into a fight. But you just don't see it because we got the pads on, we got the helmet covering our faces, and you're looking from afar from the stands. But down there in the trenches, it's nasty, you know? So when I go into a fight, I try to keep emotions out of it because that's just going to drain your energy. I'm trying to think as clearly as possible because there's so many different facets to fighting. And, you know, you got to be able to adapt on the fly and think clearly and chain moves together. So if you're just going in there with like a lot of emotion and just at this level, it's not going to work out for you very well.
You know, I mentioned about last time we talked, you had mentioned about there was going to be some announcements about your gym, and it's been a good couple months here with the Contender Series. Do you find yourself more nervous watching your teammates and your training partners fight than you're actually nervous for your own fight?
Yeah, that's funny you say that. You must have heard that from other people because that's totally true. I feel much more in control when I'm walking out and I'm getting dialed in when I fight versus when one of my fighters fights, because you're there coaching and stuff, but you're not in the driver's seat anymore. And so being a fighter and a coach, yeah, I can compare the two and I do get more nervous for my fighters, especially when they have a high level fight, you know, a fighter that I've been around for years that we brought up through the amateur ranks now into they're a pro and they're in these big fights where they're getting so close to realizing their dream. Yeah. There's a lot of nerves that go on.
I mean, especially that Contender Series, it's such a unique situation because maybe there's 100 people in the building
so quiet. It's such a different experience than anything I've seen on any regional level or anything like that. Yeah. Contender Series is different. There's no walkout music. You just walk out. There's some claps from the little bit of people that are in the bleachers watching, you know, you got the big wigs sitting over at a table and the TV crew. And that's about it. As soon as they get into the cage, there's no announcement. It's just you ready. As soon as the door closes and they fight and you can hear the spring of the canvas as they're moving around, it's that quiet in there, which was nice because we were able to easily get some information through to our fighter. But at the same time, it's just a very, very unique type fighting experience.
Yeah, I forget. I was talking to somebody recently about this. They said it's almost like you feel like you're just having a fight in a gym.
Yeah. Yeah. It almost feels like a Saturday sparring session at our gym where we're putting in our rounds and you got some people around the cage that are watching and throwing in some instructions. It felt like every Saturday.
So, final thing with this fight being, you know, so close to Wisconsin there, how many friends and family are coming to Idaho?
I do have some friends and family that usually make it out anytime I fight in the States. You know, for like three times in a row there, I was going international, and my friends and family that normally can make it out, they're like, well, and some of them were even short notice. So it's like, yeah, I'm not going to get a short notice plane ticket to New Zealand. So now it's good being back in the States. Obviously much more manageable with the weight cut and the preparation, but more manageable for friends and family that want to make it out and come watch. So, I like it. I do eventually want to fight sometime in Europe, knock that continent off the list, but, it is nice fighting in the States.
Is there a dream location in Europe?
Anywhere in Europe. You know, I fought on four continents so far. They don't do fights in Africa, or at least not yet. And they don't do them in Antarctica. So if I get a fight in Europe, then I'll have fought on every continent that I could.
And, of course, this all goes down Saturday night, July the 14th, live on FS1. You see Zach a part of the main card there. Zach, as always, I appreciate the time. And, of course, let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, on social media, I'm on Instagram and Facebook just under my name, Zach Otto. And then on Twitter, I'm at under the handle at the Barbarian MMA. So thanks a lot, Jason. Good talking again.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be a part of UFC Fight Night 133 on Saturday night, July the 14th in Boise, Idaho. It is Rick Glenn. Rick, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Looking at your Instagram page, you're loving the outdoor life there in Sacramento.
Yeah, lots of outdoorsy stuff to do nearby. We're pretty close to South Lake Tahoe, so there's a lot of pretty neat mountains and lots of awesome hikes.
And for this fight coming up here, a fight card that has multiple of your training partners on it from Team Alpha Male, so that's obviously brings a lot of advantages to it. But you know, the matchup against Dennis Ramirez, things have not gone well for him in his past couple of fights. You know, what was your kind of your thoughts when this fight was approached to you?
I was just ready to take whatever. And I'd been asked to get on the Boise card for a while, and it just happens that we got four guys from the team on there: Sage, Darren, Chad Mendez, myself. You know, we're gonna have the whole a lot of our team's gonna be out there in support. So it's awesome we're all able to enjoy the process together.
Obviously, so many great fighters there at Team Alpha Male. But how much has Andre Feely been a part of your camp preparing for this one?
A little bit. He had recovered a little bit. He's you know, he's healthy now. He recovered from some of his injuries, and yeah, you know, he's in there doing his thing. I think he might have something coming up in the near future. Just stay posted and see when he posts it. But yeah, he's getting ready for something himself too. So.
The reason I brought him up because, you know, his you know, Dennis is coming off that lost him back in January. Do you maybe pick his brain to kind of see, you know, maybe what he thought Dennis was going to do as opposed to what Dennis maybe did in the fight?
Yeah, a little bit. I asked both, you know, him and Darren certain things, but I you know, we could clearly see what I'm going to do and what he's going to do on film. So there wasn't too much game planning for this. You know, I just want to get in there and make it happen and have fun.
They always talk about why you love the matchup. So why do you like this matchup?
He's coming to bring it. No, he's not going to be running. He's not going to dance around. He's coming forward. He's going to go hard. I'm coming to bring it. So we're going to be clashing.
Do you at all, I mean, because of not getting the victory in your last fight, I mean, is there at all a little chip on your shoulder kind of, you know, to get back into, you know, the winning side of the fight? I mean, people can look at it and say, oh, it's a bad chip, but do you maybe look at that as a healthy chip just to offer you the motivation?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it stinks to lose, of course. So I've worked a little harder and worked on my weaknesses, and, you know, I'm coming in well prepared.
You know, in terms of working on your weaknesses, is that just something where you just have to kind of be honest with yourself and understanding of, you know, why certain things happen the way and just, you know, just be brutally honest?
Oh, for sure. And then the people that we're surrounded by should check us sometimes too. And, you know, if we don't realize we're not working on our weaknesses, then, you know, someone close to us should tell us. And, you know, I'm with a good team out here at Team Alpha Male, and got some good coaches and training partners by my side. And, yeah, things are going pretty good out here.
It's going to be, you know, what, 7 months since the last time you stepped in. I mean, is it kind of, has it been a frustrating 7 months?
At times, but, you know, the time has kind of went by really. I am enjoying the process. And like I said, I got to work on some weaknesses that, you know, I was kind of, you know, maybe not training as much, and, yeah, just enjoying life. And it's kind of went by pretty quick. At times it sucks, but I'm glad it's going to happen here in a couple weeks.
You know, fight being in Boise, obviously a Midwest guy. Do you got a lot of friends and family that are coming to the fight?
Yeah, I should have quite a few people there. You know, friends and family from all over. So we were trying to plan something to enjoy Boise, you know, Idaho, head over to Yellowstone after the fight, but I don't think it's going to work out this time. But we'll see what I can see in fight week in Boise.
For the fans in Boise, Idaho, what should they expect out of your fight?
A vicious gladiator coming to battle. I'm ready to get in there and perform for you guys. So stay tuned.
Of course, this will be a part of FS1's main card. Of course, that fight card lineup just came out. Rick, man, as always, I appreciate time and good luck in the fight. And of course, let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
Heck yeah. Yeah, check me out on Instagram, Gladiator MMA, Facebook, my online page, rickglennmma.com.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that, if you're not aware of his name, I mean, well, at least in Georgia, Cole, are they still calling you the most hated fighter in all of Georgia?
You know, I think a lot of them have kind of shut up. There's still a few haters out there, but my last fight was against a solid guy. He was 4-2, I was 4-0, and I beat him in 90 seconds, like I did all the other guys, or less. So a lot of them have shut up a little bit, but some of them are still in my inbox. I'm trying to remain relevant off of my name, and that's completely fine. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, and that's whooping ass, collecting checks, and creating a legacy for myself and the ones I love.
Now, your opponent, Joe Pegg, he was on the Valor Hour, and one of the things that he mentioned, he said, hey, you know, Cole actually reached out to me before this fight was set, and basically, that's kind of how everything got in the works. And some fighters may kind of take that in a disrespectful way, but Joe's like, hey, man, he goes, I'm actually a fan of Cole. He goes, I like the way he promotes fights. He goes, you know what? It's going to be a fun scrap. You know, kind of, was he a guy that was on your radar?
Well, it kind of went down like this. I was on YouTube one day watching fights. You know, I'm a fan of this sport just as much as I am a fighter. So I ran across one of Joe's fights, and he had some nice spinning heel kicks, and he ended up winning by a guillotine, though. I said, okay, this guy's pretty good. So I Googled him, and he had a winning record. That was most important to me. It said he fought Sergio Pettis, who's a top UFC flyweight right now. 6-5 record, a bunch of knockouts. So I just said, you know what? This guy's tough. Let me make it happen. Let me reach out and see if he's available. I like Joe as well. I'm glad he respects me. I respect him too, but I just really hate what I'm going to have to do to him. But hey, it's all love before the fight, but when we're in there, there's no love from me.
And you said on your Facebook page that you said this will be the toughest fight in my career to this point. His pro record is 6-5. His amateur record is 5-2, totaling 9 knockouts, 2 submissions. I cannot sleep on him at all, or I could get slept. And I get, that's a mentality you hear from a lot of fighters. Was there a reason why you decided to put that out in a public post?
Well, you know, I think the older I get in life, the wiser I am becoming, and just the more realistic I am becoming, not just in mixed martial arts, but life in general. So, you know, I still have the same confidence that I've always had, and it's always going to be there. But, you know, the more successful I get, the tougher the competition is going to get as well. So I've seen Joe knock many men out on footage, and it can happen to me just like it can anyone else. The only difference is it's not going to happen to me. It could, but it's not going to. I am more prepared for this fight than I've been any fight. And I say that every fight because it's all about improvement to me. Every single fight, I want to be a better fighter. Every fighter says that, but a lot of these guys don't evolve. A lot of these guys are not trying to add new tools to their arsenal. And a lot of these guys don't want to be remembered as one of the greatest of all time when they die. They just don't, and I do. And that's what sets me apart from the pack. So, I made that comment because, listen, it could happen. Joe is a talented fighter, and I probably like Joe more than I've liked any guy I've ever fought, you know? So, but that doesn't make this any different. I'm going to go in there, and when I grab him, I'm going to be able to do what I want with him. And when I hit him, he's going to feel something that he hasn't felt before. So, and that's no disrespect to Joe. That's just who I am and what I do. Everybody knows that I'm special, or at least the people who know me, they know I'm special. They know that I'm going to do big things in this sport. I envision it. I believe it. I work hard for it. And piece by piece and fight by fight, it's becoming a reality. It's becoming a reality. And I thank God the most for that. And I also thank everyone who's always supported me. You know, that fuel I get when I look into my little son's eyes, my little boy, I'm sorry. He, you know, it's just a look I can't describe with words. And every fight, I'm just getting better and better. So July 21st, you're going to see a better Cole.
How have you evolved as a fighter from April to now?
Oh, man. You know, it's crazy because I've evolved in such a big way that most fighters or people who listen to me wouldn't believe it unless you're in the gym with me seeing it with your own eyes. I'm stronger. I've implemented new strength and conditioning programs that I've never implemented in my entire fight career. I've really never messed with weights a lot. I was afraid of becoming too stiff. But now I have balanced everything out perfectly. Everything is by the numbers. Everything is to the T. All the way from strength and conditioning to jiu-jitsu. I'm putting the gi on more. I'm more active in class in regards to jiu-jitsu. My hands are always staying crisp and sharp. I'm always keeping my boxing on point, my Muay Thai. I'm basically just putting more and more effort and time throughout each victory because throughout each victory, I'm getting closer to where I want to be. And once I'm there, that's where it's going to get even tougher because that's when I need to be fighting the best guys in the world. And I see that coming for me very soon. But, yeah, the difference in me, this fight, is just everything. I'm more motivated. I'm stronger. I'm faster. None of these guys are on my level. None of them. And then all of them come out of the woodwork when they see interviews like this and start talking behind their keyboards or in other interviews. And I'm so immune to it now. It doesn't even bother me. Any publicity is good publicity. I'm more intelligent than 99% of fighters in mixed martial arts. Most of these guys, they don't think about the life after fighting. I do. So I'm not only building myself as a fighter, but I'm building a brand here. I'm building a brand, and I'm doing it for the future. So every day I'm thinking about the future, and I'm working hard in the current to make it all reality. So a lot of these guys aren't near as smart as me, and I implement that when I step in the cage as well. So if Joe gets to watch this, Joe, nothing but love for you, bro. But I like you a lot. So I think if anybody needs to send you off into retirement, it needs to be me because I really think you're a good guy. And you need to have someone like me to do it. That way, when I am a UFC world champion, it's not going to look bad that I was the last guy that you fought. Okay, so yeah, man, I'm ready. We are 3 weeks and some change out. I'm sharp. I'm fast. I'm crisp. Woo! I got the biggest arms, man, and I got the best charm. I got it all. So these guys aren't seeing me right now, man. I'm ready to rock and roll July 21st.
It's something you said there, you talk about life after fighting. And for, I think for a lot of people, maybe in the position that you're in, such, you know, young guy in your career, it's not something you hear from them. So what does life after fighting look like for you?
Life after fighting for me is so detailed. I have such a detailed strategy that I want to implement. So life after fighting for me is not only opening up a gym, but it's opening up a gym where it all started for me. That's in my hometown of Brunswick, Georgia, South Georgia. Just to give back, there's going to be a lot of profit for me there because I'm the biggest fighter to ever come out of that area and the biggest that will ever come out of that area. So when I say I'm branding myself as a fighter, I'm doing it so I don't have to spend a ton of money on marketing when that time comes because, well, my name is the market. So the gym is key for me. You know, I see myself mid, late 30s, retiring from the sport, extremely successful and getting the gym going. I also, I want to own a pub. You know, I have a lot of Irish in my blood and, I want to own a pub, maybe back home, maybe somewhere up here in Atlanta. I want to own businesses. You know, I do want to be a business owner and a successful one. And life after fighting not only includes that, but it includes family. You know, I have a son right now, Ben Farrell. He'll be 4 years old in August. I want about three more kids, honestly, when the time is right. So life after fighting will be a lot of family time, a lot of business a building time, a lot of making money, and just enjoying life and mainly enjoying the fruits of my labor from all the asses I've kicked and all the cash I earned in my professional career.
Obviously, and I know I've talked to you about this. I've talked to Tim Loy about this. You know, you're a promoter's dream because you promote your fight so well, and you've done a great job with that. But is there anything that people would be surprised to know about you that they just wouldn't expect?
That's so funny you asked me that because I think about this in particular from time to time. Some people base me off of only what they see in post-fight interviews or videos on YouTube or interviews in general. And that's what they go off of. And then they tell the next person who doesn't know me and the next person. So it creates this persona or stereotype about me that isn't really accurate. But there's certain things I do for certain reasons. I think the main thing, though, that would surprise a lot of people is I'm one of the most loving human beings ever. Like, my mom always raised me to treat others the way you want to be treated. And I've lived by that my entire life. I just try to treat everybody with respect. And what I'm getting at here is when people experience this with me, when they encounter me and actually can hear me out and have a solid conversation, 99.9% of the time, they always say, "Cole, I'm not even going to lie. I thought you were going to be a douchebag. I thought you were going to have like a temper issue because of fighting, or I thought you were going to be an asshole, or I thought you were going to think you were better than everybody, or I didn't even think you would talk to me," you know? And some of that stuff does hurt a little bit, you know, because I don't want to come off as unprofessional or a complete dickhole, because that's not who I am. I'm just a fighter who, like, I don't take shit from people. I'm not going to bite my tongue if someone's disrespecting me, and I'm always going to stand my ground, and I'm extremely confident, but I'm a loving person. I have a strong faith in God, and I love my family, and, you know, I even pray for all of my opponents before every fight. A lot of people don't know that. I do it the night before the fight, and, you know, basically, hey, no matter what I do to this guy, I hope he recovers and I hope we both come out safe to a certain extent. I mean, it's fighting. Come on. So,
I mean, confidence is such a huge part of sports in general, but especially MMA, because it's one-on-one competition. This isn't a football game where you're one of 11 guys on your team. Was confidence always there for you, or did it kind of take some time to build into it?
Confidence is something that has always been there for me. You know, I played team sports my entire life. I played team sports. And that was one of the things for me, is no matter how good I did, it wasn't in my hands. So once I experienced the sport, such as wrestling and boxing for the first time, the outcome was in my hands. And that did build a confidence that maybe I didn't have before while playing team sports. But I've always had a confidence. You know, I think I've been in more street altercations than most fighters in the game. And that goes back to me basically just like being a guy who doesn't take shit from anybody. I'm very mature. I'm not trashy. I don't go around starting crap. But for a good period of my life, I never shied away from it, you know. But I've always been confident, and it's only growing right now. But I'm never going to let it outgrow who I am. Like I said at the beginning of this interview, Joe can sleep me. That can happen. Is it going to? No. But anything can happen. That's what keeps me sharp. But I've always been confident, and I took a lot of shit from people growing up. Like, I was never bullied, but there's just specific instances in life to where, you know, I wish I would have did something, or I wish I would have said something back to that person. And now I walk around on a daily basis thinking like, wow, you know what? I've earned my spot. I've earned my respect, and I don't have to take shit from anybody anymore. And I'm still going to treat people the way they want to be treated. But I'm not going to take shit from anyone. So, yeah, I'm one of the more confident fighters in the game, and I carry that in all aspects of my life. But also, I know my limits.
Cole, as always, man, I appreciate your time. Final thing, is there at all part of you that wants to get past the 2 minute and 38 second mark of the first round?
Funny you say that. Yeah, out of all five pro fights, that's the longest one has went. Honestly, I'll take them as short as they come. If I can still leave the cage looking pretty and injury-free, that way I can prepare for a next fight even quicker, then I'll do it. But my older brother, he hasn't came to any of my fights, and I hope he sees this. I'm calling him out. He lives in Florida, and he's like, well, I'm not going to be able to make it to this one. I'm not going to go down there for 15-second victory, blah, blah, blah. I want to see a fight. So it's funny you asked me that, and I told him, I said, I'll take them how they come, you know. Yeah, there's going to be a time where I have a split decision bloodbath or whatever, you know, that's fighting. But for right now, I'm just going to keep trying to steamroll guys and do what I do. And that's rack W's.
Now, of course, where can everybody follow you out on social media?
Social media, my Instagram is popping right now. Cole Ferrell MMA, ColeFerrellMMA, all in one, no underscores. Snapchat, Q Cole F. My Facebook fan page, Cole Ferrell MMA, same as Instagram. And my Twitter is Cole Ferrell MMA. But I want to give a big shout out to my gym. That's where I'm at right now, X3 Sports. Well, so I'm in the yoga room right now because there's music playing out here. But we have four different locations in Atlanta. I'm in the Marietta location. We are the best gym in the southeast of the country. We have over like six pro fighters with all winning records. We're just a bunch of savages. Shout out to everyone who has shown me support and believed in me. I'm going to have t-shirts coming out soon and a website coming out soon. So, yeah, Mr. Floyd, I appreciate the interview, brother. It's always a good time.
Appreciate it, Cole, man. Look forward to seeing the fight here.
Yes, sir. You have a good one.
And Daniel, there was my conversations with Zach Otto, Rick Glenn, and Cole Ferrell. One thing I want to mention about Zach Otto, and I talked about last week where it's just amazing, kind of that fight booking to me is just a weird fight booking. But here's the even weirder part about that fight. He is the betting underdog.
Well, earlier on in this podcast, we suggested putting some money on the underdog in Brad Tavares. And a fighter who's proven himself like Zach Otto as a high skill competitor going up against Sage Northcutt, as promising as Sage Northcutt is, the fact that he's an underdog, I think that's absolutely something you got to take advantage of.
Yeah, he's plus 115, Sage Northcutt minus 145. I saw that line, and I was just like, holy cow. Could not believe that. Of course, that's a fight card that's going to be headlined by Blagoy Ivanov making his UFC debut against Junior Dos Santos. Of course, Rick Glenn on that card. And then you heard from Cole Farrell, who is a guy on the regional scene here in the Southeast. He is a guy that has done a tremendous job of promoting himself. But also very interesting in that interview talking about that he understands that, you know, he can get knocked out. And sometimes, you necessarily don't always hear that from fighters. So I really do appreciate all those guys coming up on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Now, the final thing I want to bring up here this week is something that happened late last week where Ali Abdelaziz, of course, the manager to fighters like Khabib Nurmagomedov and many other UFC fighters, he did an interview with TMZ where, he basically talking about Conor needs a payday. And, you know, and my first thought, when I initially saw this, I said, okay, this is Ali Abdelaziz trying to create maybe some steam to get Conor McGregor to take the fight with Khabib. Because, look, the only people that would know, truly know, Conor's financial state are, you know, the people in his inner circle, the people that handle his finances. I'm sure that Conor spends a lot of money, but, you know, let's be honest about this. The reason Ali's probably making those comments is to try to help kind of, you know, inch this fight closer to happening, which also I do believe that because of his situation in New York, and since Ali was in that bus, Conor really can't come out publicly and respond to him. But let's call it what this was. This was Ali being a promoter more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, Conor McGregor isn't calling Nurmagomedov's camp to voice his issues financially. That is absolutely the last group of people that would know about it. Look, it would be not shocking if a guy like Conor McGregor, who makes a lot of poor decisions, burned through all his money. So Ali's comments may in fact be true, but it's unlikely if they're sourced in any type of fact. And, you know, Ali's a modern day carny. I mean, that's the way I would describe him. This is a guy who just says things and he says things in order to what he believes will benefit his client, which, I mean, hey, that's his job. He's an agent. That's what he's doing. And I don't think that moves the needle on whether or not that fight's going to happen at all. It's just Ali Abdelaziz being Ali Abdelaziz. With that being said, he might be right because Conor McGregor looks like a guy who could throw down some money on a night full of poor choices.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say, and I've always said this, whatever your feelings are about Ali Abdelaziz, the guy knows how to promote his fighters. There is no doubt about that. He does a tremendous job of promoting his guys. And, you know, Khabib Conor is one of the biggest fights out there. It'll be the biggest payday of Khabib Nurmagomedov's career, and probably the biggest payday for Ali Abdelaziz as well as a manager. So I think that you got to maybe look a little deeper in that story of exactly why, Ali poking the bear a little bit. And, there's so many ways I think Conor could go in his next fight. Someone asked me the other day, they said, what do you think the fight that's most likely? I still think it's GSP.
You do? Yeah. I think that's most likely because I also think if you're in Conor's camp, not only is that fight just as huge, it's I think a fight where you have a better chance of winning. And there's value in that. There's value in getting your hand raised next time you get out there.
But, I mean, there's a lot of markable fights there for Conor. You know, the Nate Diaz trilogy match is something that I think people would get interested. It wouldn't shock me if Khabib Tony happens before Conor fights.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either because the thing is, Khabib and Tony Ferguson are two guys that actually still want to fight in the UFC. And nothing with Conor would shock me, Jason. This is a guy who, as Bill Simmons has coined it, the Tyson zone, where he's in a zone where any action he does wouldn't be surprising. He's already throwing a dolly into a bus. So I wouldn't be shocked. But with that being said, I think my general expectation is that Conor McGregor fights before then. And I think he fights late 2018.
And look, it's going to be a huge fight, but it is a huge fight weekend. Really looking forward to Saturday's UFC 226. I'll be watching the fight with the fellas on Saturday night. It's a busy week for me. You got the 4th of July, which of course is today, Wednesday. And, everyone's got their 4th of July festivities going on this week. be safe if you're going out there. If you're gonna, you know, have a little adult beverage, hop up on that Uber app. That's exactly what I do, is hop around that Uber app and get you right there. So hopefully everyone has a safe weekend. Of course, as always, you can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Rate and review us as well there. If you have any questions or comments, you can do that via Twitter, at @Jason_Floyd, at @DanielGalvonDGG. Daniel, you got any big plans this week, man?
Oh, man, tonight, Wednesday night, July the 4th, it's a big day in the Rio Grande Valley, as we got a Club America, a Mexican League team. They're like the New York Yankees of the Mexican Soccer League. And obviously with all the players in Russia, obviously Mexican players are no longer playing in Russia. You know, sorry, Mexico. But with a lot of the top players in Russia, they're doing friendly games. So Club America, a major team, is going to be playing tonight, and I'll be working that game. It is going to be packed. But that is my July the 4th night plans, Jason. And as for the weekend, this is a weekend for the boys or the girls, your friend group, because this is a big-time fight. This is the type of weekend where you invite your friends over, you invite the people who kind of like the UFC, and the people who have never seen a UFC. This is the event you expose them to.
You know, it's always amazed me when I go out to a bar to watch the UFC. I'm really shocked I don't see a Saturday or For the Boys flag rolling around.
Absolutely. I mean, you see it in every college, you know, dorm room. That to me is a fitting bar decoration.
Don't you wish you would have came up with that phrase? Oh my goodness. How much money they, oh man, whoever was the originator of that saying, man, goldmine. Whew.
Yeah, Barstool is a sports website, but they're also an idea company. They're also a merch company. That's their goal. That's their goal, right? They just come up with genius merch ideas, and it just sells like hotcakes.
Lifestyle brand.
Exactly.
Yeah, I saw the other day they were selling a T-shirt that said USA back-to-back World War champs or something like that, or back-to-back world champions.
Jesus, yeah. That's I mean, they know their niche, and their niche is bros, and it works. Those bros want to show off that they're bros, and They'll provide the merch for it.
I'll tell you, their Instagram feed's hilarious. If you ever look at if you ever need like a good laugh, just either hit up the Barstool Sports Instagram, or there's a Saturday For the Boys Instagram. If you ever just need like, you're having a bad day, you need a good laugh, just hop on that Instagram feed, and you're gonna feel pretty good about yourself.
Absolutely, and if you wanna feel good about yourself, also follow Jason Floyd on Instagram, so you can see all the delicious food he eats that you don't.
And I'll be enjoying going to a pool party on Saturday afternoon. So I'm sure there'll be some good food at that one. So looking forward to it. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Cam Chancellor. He said he played his last game. Now, one thing that we're seeing in the NFL, and it used to be that you have to pry somebody off the field until they can't walk. These days, there's guys stepping away, man. There's guys stepping away from the game. Cam Chancellor, the safety for the Seahawks, I had a neck surgery in the offseason and basically said, I think I played my last game. And you feel for the kid because he was a big hitter, great football player on a great team. And you don't want to play. You don't want to go out like that. You want to step away from the game the way you want to. Now, the unfortunate part is, you know, other than off the top of my head, Peyton Manning and John Elway, and those are obviously really big names. Nobody really steps away from the game the way they want to. I didn't. I mean, my last year in Philadelphia, which would have been 1998, I played every snap, and I was in my ninth year. And then that was the last football that I played. So that's not the way I want to go out. I'm not complaining. But somebody like Cam Chancellor, you don't want to go out with an injury. You know, that's a tough way to go out. So, you know, you hope everything works out with Cam Chancellor later on in his life. Because he's going to do some big things, that's for sure.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.